teacher, she volunteered to be a presenter at a summer teaching pilot program. The program was open to motivated students who wanted to explore the human experience. The program included the topics of philosophy, the arts, concepts in biology, and facets of human motivation. It was the facets of motivation to which Mary had been assigned. For weeks, Mary had read materials and talked them over with Arthur. Every few days, she was on a different tangent. Should she explore human invention, the lessons of failure, growth, emotionality, morality? The list was really endless. Arthur could tell you for sure because he heard every item on the list. Eventually, Mary refined her thoughts and charted her course. She decided to present material about successfully manifesting one's dreams using Joan of Arc and Christopher Paolini, a writer, as examples. Having researched both figures for weeks, when the day came for her presentation, Mary was poised and confident. Arthur was grateful and relieved. Today, I plan to share with you, students, information that may provide you tools for identifying and achieving your truest hopes and dreams. Ah, you think to yourself, what does Miss Mary know about my passions? It's a fair question to ask, but the truth is that manifesting your deepest purpose relies on the same personal qualities that were manifested by Joan of Arc in changing the course of French and English history, and Christopher Paolini, a 15-year-old writer who's now worth $5 million. In achievement, the personal qualities of the achievers are very similar, regardless of the outcomes. Looking out among her students, Mary realized that 20% were in rapt attention, and 80% were still considering her words. She continued, in April and May of 1929, Joan of Arc, a 17-year-old woman, forever changed French and English geography and history. We know what occurred because her unusually detailed trial records still exist. But that's the end of the story. The beginning of the story was that Joan was born in 1412, 75 years into the Hundred Year War, which actually extended to about 116 years. By this time, most of northern France was occupied by the English and English sympathizers. This is France, and this is where the English and the sympathizers were, and this little piece here was loyal to France, to the uncrowned King of France. When Joan was 13 and continuing two or three times a week, she was visited by three saints, Saint Michael, Saint Catherine, and Saint Marguerite. This may seem very familiar to you Catholics who, you know, have that background. She was visited while she was playing outside. It's also noted that many times a day, Joan fell to her knees in prayer. She was a very, very pious young woman, and she was open to spirit. Initially, the saints told her just to be good and to pray and be pious. And down the road, they told her that her mission was to drive the English from France and to crown the Dauphin, who is the crown prince, crown him king. Joan took all of this seriously, and at age 16, had an uncle take her to a nearby town, and he spoke with the captain about her mission, and the captain told him to take her home and beat her. And she returned home, but now the story was out, that she felt that she was on a mission from God. This was her highest purpose, and Her parents tried to marry her off, but that was unsuccessful. And 7 months later, she was back before the captain. And he agreed to send her with troops for safety to the Dauphin. When she left her community, she couldn't tell her parents, her family, or her friends because she knew what her purpose was. And she knew if she told anyone, they would maybe even physically restrain her to the community. So she had to leave without taking leave of anyone. She arrived in Chinon, a city where the Dauphin resided, and she requested an audience. And he required multiple examinations, both clerical and physical, to really determine that she was both a good Christian and a virgin. All of that settled at age 17 in April of her 17th year. He sent her out with 3,000 to 4,000 troops. They traveled to Orléans, a city that had withstood an English siege for 8 months. And the English had 4 siege towers to keep food and supplies coming in. She managed to evade the towers and enter Orléans. And within a few days, she rallied her troops, and they went out, and they took one of the 4 siege towers. She then ordered all her men to pray and give thanks to God. And actually, the generals were inspired by their troops, who pretty much most of them dropped to their knees and gave thanks. In addition, she told the troops that they could not leave Orléans the next day to fight until they had gone to confession and until they had rid the troops of the camp followers. For the most part, again, the generals and the troops did as she instructed. 2 days later, against the advice of her generals, Joan mustered the French troops and took 2 more English siege fortresses. The following day, they barred the gate in Orléans to keep her in because they were afraid if the main gate was open, the English would come in. And Joan used her personal presence to get the gate opened, and the troops went and took the final siege tower. This was at a time when war was fought by building towers and having a siege instead of attacking directly your target. And so this was a different way of waging war, and seasoned generals were following someone who was 17, a woman who was 17 years old. With Orléans free, it was a major turning point in the war. Immediately, Joan turned to the task of getting the Dauphin crowned at Reims, the traditional location of coronations. Unfortunately, there was enemy territory that had to be addressed on the way. The Dauphin was broke. However, the troops offered to go for free and offer protection if Joan would lead them. So it was weeks before the Dauphin finally quit having consultations with his counselors and left for Reims, and he was crowned King Charles VII. By age 18, Joan was captured by an English sympathizer and sold to the English. By age 19, she had had a trial and was burned at the stake. Mary's class was mesmerized. Changing gears, Mary said, "Now let's turn to Christopher Paolini." The class resisted having many questions about Joan of Arc. Mary deflected them as her time was limited, and she still hadn't tied Joan to the concepts that had accounted for her success. It was such a great class. Mary was glad to be part of their passion. Chris Paolini was born in 1984 and is a well-known author. His first book was on most bestseller lists for almost a year. Mary continued, Chris was raised in Montana and was homeschooled along with his younger brother. His mother resigned her position as a Montessori teacher in order to teach her own children this program that focused on individual instruction and development of early writing skills. Chris's father operated a small home-based publishing company, and the family lived simply on his income. Chris did not embrace reading until he discovered fantasy books like Tolkien and Asimov. He devoured these books. Living in a physical expanse that was fairly barren, he learned to entertain himself, often in solitary activities, like lying on a hill and looking up at the clouds and just daydreaming, just connecting with himself. As time passed, he imagined a storyline about the adventures of a boy and his best friend, a blue dragon. Chris set a goal to write a book about them by the time he was age 15. As Chris got older and started his book, he forwarded chapters to friends online, and they were well received. Ultimately, he produced his first book, Aragon. Ever supportive of their son, his father published 10,000 copies, then the family traveled across the country marketing the book to bookstores, libraries, schools, and so on. To generate interest, Chris would dress up in medieval clothing and give presentations about the world of Aragon. At this point, Chris was the sole breadwinner for the family. So the pressure for his book to do well was intense. He reports feeling stressed but confident. Serendipitously, or as we might say, in divine order, an author and his family vacationed in Montana, and the author's stepson bought a copy of Aragon. When the author read the book, he mailed a copy to his publisher, Alfred A. Knopf. Knopf bought the rights to the book and two sequels for a three-figure sum of money. Today, Christopher is the successful author of more than the three books that he originally planned to write. Laughter and applause broke out as the students imagined a child their age earning three figures. Mary smiled and calmly brought the class under control. They discussed in some detail the concepts I will now outline for you folks. Mary had to start with the very basics, while those congregated before me have a more advanced understanding of basic concepts. Both Joan of Arc and Chris had life-changing experiences or dreams while not engaged in other mind-consuming activities. Joan, when she was playing with friends and praying many times daily, and Chris when he was at his leisure, daydreaming. To have a powerful, life-changing idea, it's important to build relaxed or meditative time into our schedules, to go within and allow the idea to take form. Some people meditate, others lollygag. Play is important. Unscheduled time is important. All these are important steps in developing the requisite concentration to tap into divine power. Joan of Arc was fully committed to her mission of routing the English from France and getting the Dauphin crowned. It's not hard to imagine, as she perceived that three saints made it clear that this was her life task. Okay, that's kind of like cheating. Usually the ideas do not come from three saints in your visions. But Joan concentrated on her tasks and determined that to achieve her goals, she had to take many necessary steps, such as painfully leaving her family and home without telling anyone. Christopher heard no sainted voices. He's a young person like the rest of us were at one time. He simply used the spaces available to him on long car drives and other free time to focus his mind, to concentrate on his goal, and to make a plan that resounded with his soul. So in exploring divine power, we've seen several examples of the need for a productive use of unscheduled time and scheduled free time to concentrate and hone our purpose. This type of concentration is absolutely necessary to explore the core of our spirit and to move into a state where we can experience divine power. The second step in achieving divine power is self-mastery. Both Joan of Arc and Chris utilized this step in achieving their divine power. It's likely on some level that Joan wished for a life in her village with her family and friends, maybe getting married and having a husband and children. But understanding the requirements of her spirit, regardless of how the burden was put on her, understanding the requirements of spirit through almost constant prayer, she forsook all of the activities she might have done to act in concert with the motivations that were consistent with the core of her soul. For Chris, self-mastery came in the form of knowing himself well enough and having enough discipline to read books about writing books, to set a timetable, then to sit at his computer, fine-tune his plot, and produce the book. According to the author of Divine Audacity, every religion discusses mastering the self. I think the Jewish Mishnah states it most clearly. Who is strong? He who controls his passions. In Sikhism, the word scripture contains the statement, with the conquest of my mind, I have conquered the whole world. In order to fulfill our purpose efficiently and fully with divine power, we need to fearlessly look inside ourselves and eliminate that which does not serve our divine spirit. To achieve self-mastery, we need to arrive at a point where we're fully in control of ourselves, consistent with our connection to the spirit within. We have to let go of beliefs that do not serve our spiritual selves. When we believe that we're on the edge of financial ruin and we constantly fret about money, we have actually given money control over our lives. We need to deny the power of money and affirm that there is plenty of substance in the universe. And then we have to trust spirit and let it go. Self-mastery is especially important in the minutiae of life because small incidents where we act out of integrity with spirit become a pattern of behavior. If I allow my sister to take away my bottle without complaint, it is likely I will allow playmates to take away my toys and older children to copy my homework and adults to impose upon me for favors. It's important to know what your spiritual needs are and to insist on meeting them. This takes self-knowledge and the decision to handle directly and timely incidents where we find ourselves out of integrity. We need to eliminate the times we say yes and mean no thank you. The author, Laura Witsit, writes, cultivating self-mastery along with courage, we become self-knowing, transparent, and confident. And we sleep better at night. And we sleep better at night because we're not ruminating about what we wish we'd said. Because we have learned to say our truth at the time that we need to. So we've talked about concentration, focusing, and we've talked about self-mastery. And the third prong of divine power is spiritual authority. We again see it evidenced in the life of Joan of Arc and Chris. Joan of Arc was charismatic. In my life, such people are people who relate to me from a place of inner truth. When others were in Joan's presence, they appeared to feel the majesty of her connection with spirit. She spoke with the authority of someone who was immersed in the understanding of her true spirit. Regardless of how many times seasoned generals, and this happened regularly about just about every decision she made, regardless of how many times these generals told Joan she should wait to attack or wait for reinforcements or wait for this or wait for that, or you know, Joan spoke her truth, saying essentially, "You have your counsel and I have mine. The counsel of our Lord is wiser and better than yours." And every time she prevailed, she simply went on her course, and these big burly generals followed her. Chris's spiritual authority was more subtle, but was clearly evidenced in the fact that he was able to put all other concerns aside and immerse himself in his chosen task of writing this book. He was in touch with his inner spirit and knew what he was compelled to produce. He produced it well and enriched countless lives with the outcome. So what really is spiritual authority? It involves the decision to shift away from that which is human and focus on that which is uplifting and inspiring. Spiritual authority is essentially becoming the presence of spirit. It comes from the soul, not from the head. And adopting such a focus allows you to live in a serene state of spiritual authority. In conclusion, divine power is achieved when, by meditation or other means, one achieves mastery of concentration, the mastery of self, and the mastery of spiritual authority. Whether one's mission is to free a nation or to enter the bottomless world of fantasy and create an inspired book, concentration, self-mastery, and spiritual authority are essential to the success. Just by her presence, Joan of Arc clearly communicated to all from a place of divine power. People immersed in divine power are often those who call to us from across a room by their very presence. And we've all known those people. You're at a party and you think, boy, I want to get to know that person. I wish all of us every success in developing our own connection to divine power and finding others who are like-minded. Thank you.